Don't focus on what you need to get done. Focus on who you need to be in order to get it done. And so when you ask the question, what sort of is the real man? For me, it's about being responsible. It's about being accountable. It's about being nurturing and loving and having strength, though, being strength or having not just physical, but emotional strength, mental strength as well. So those are things that I think makes up a real man, especially being accountable, being responsible, and being self-aware of the impact on others. It, to me, strength is the strength to be vulnerable when necessary, to show sensitivity. Sort of the opposites of what, you know, the traditional male or toxic masculine is about. It's kind of the opposite. Again, that's what I call like a real, have created a culture to say that that's the real man.
Two days out from Father's Day, we explore the concept of centering men, a topic perhaps controversial or maybe even unwelcome in a time when men are often considered the root of many problems. We were fortunate to approach this sensitive topic with Kavika Matos, proud father and grandfather, and facilitator of men's groups as well as parenting classes for both men and women. He helps shine a light on what's unique about the male experience. What role does male healing play in societal healing? How does society's traditional definition of a quote-unquote real man negatively impact the way in which boys develop emotional sensitivity and expression? How do we evolve from that definition and incorporate values of self-awareness, sensitivity, and vulnerability? And finally, how can we as a society support dialogue and community around such a topic with a spirit of unity? Kavika emphasizes that every conversation has a place, that we can strive to create space for each person's healing, and that we are strongest when we show up with a willingness to learn, practice, and grow together.
Howdy, folks. Welcome back to another episode of Woven Wings Live. I'm your host, Gabe Crane. I'm joined by my co-host, Rahul Didwania. And here we bring you wisdom and tools for vibrant living. And so if you enjoy listening to us, please share our work with a friend or leave us a review wherever you listen to podcasts. You can also join our newsletter, which is linked in the show description, to follow along the journey. And today I'm really excited about the topic we have here. A title of our show is Centering Men: The Importance of Men's Work in Societal Healing. And our guest today is David Kavika Matos, who's become a personal mentor and friend of mine. He is the program supervisor of the Kane Connections Program with Maui Family Support Services on the island of Maui, where I live. And that organization and that group facilitates men's work, parenting classes for both men and women. I'll introduce Kavika a little bit more later, but he's also a representative of the Hawaii State Commission on Fatherhood. And so really, we've got this topic today that's really looking at the experience of men and the importance of men's work in changing some of the challenges, deep-seated challenges we have in society. And so before I go further, I just want to bring on my co-host, Rahul Didwania. And Rahul, it's really great to be here with you as always. And I'm curious, as we open up this topic, you're a man, I'm a man. What are you thinking or feeling about jumping into this topic today?
Thank you, Gabe. A pleasure as always. And yeah, you know, just what comes to mind is actually a little bit of what I was sharing with you right before we jumped on here, right? Which is, first, there's, I think, a little bit of nervousness around the topic and this, you know, I think what that is it's an insight into this feeling that sometimes it feels weird to acknowledge that we as men maybe have a conversation that needs to be had, right? And I think we talk a lot about the conflict and pain across the gender spectrum in today's society. And often I think that conversation has shifted, at least in recent times, towards the more marginalized groups. And then that leads to, which is, you know, certainly well-deserved and important and critical, but sometimes I can also feel like it leads to a little bit of a generalization, you know, of the so-called majority group feeling. And obviously as men, we sort of fall into that. And, you know, I think we were talking before about how men are often seen as the problem, but also that men don't typically have the tools or the access to the tools or the, I guess, the social permission to really go out and work on some of these things, you know, in ways that would be helpful, in ways that really could shift the conversation, shift the dynamic, hopefully, you know, alleviate some of the sources of the problems. You know, you hear the term toxic masculinity all the time in society today. And it's like, how do we deal with that? You know, and I think as a man who's both experienced that, been drawn to that, you know, form of masculinity, but also away from it, I think just kind of have felt like, hey, it's something that we just like figure out, you know, and work on and on our own versus, you know, in community and in conversation. And I'm excited, like really excited today to really first understand how to have this conversation and feel okay, you know, having this conversation, and then actually go a little bit deeper into what it can open up, you know. And I know some of my friends, you know, male friends also don't necessarily know how to have this kind of conversation. And I'm excited to see kind of what it looks like and hopefully be able to take back some of that wisdom, you know, in my own dialogue with them. So that's a little bit of what I'm feeling. And I'd love to hear, Gabe, what your experience has been. I know you've kind of dove into this world a little bit more. Would love to just hear what you're feeling as we enter this dialogue.
Well, yeah, I think I really appreciate what you said around, you know, men, my friends, myself, knowing whether how to have this conversation or not. And I guess I would just put that out there to men, if you're listening to this, is to just like come along, let's go on this journey together a little bit. And that's not to say if you're not a man listening to this, I think you'll get a lot of value from this too. So stay with us. But, you know, I feel like it's this journey of integration between, I don't know, different experiences. And so much of the male experience, which you alluded to, you know, I have those parts of my life as well. I've got my buddies that I grew up playing sports with, probably have more typical male kind of stereotypical relationships or topics that we engage around. And somehow when you go on this journey to exploring men's work, quote unquote, and we'll go into this, I think, more deeper later, you feel like you're like departing from the realm of like real masculinity or real men. And that's part of the problem, right? Like that's not the case at all. And so I think, but nonetheless, if that happens and you lose people along the way, the value of the conversation diminishes too. And so I feel like, you know, if you're tuning in, like regardless of where you're at, however you imagine yourself as a man, you know, like this episode's for you. It's really around how do we have this conversation and be real in the wholeness of who we are as men, which isn't about getting rid of our masculinity, but maybe understanding it more. And I think Kaviko will be able to speak to that a little bit. And I think that's the other piece I just want to touch on. I'll introduce Kaviko in a little more depth here in one moment. But I've gotten to meet Kaviko through engaging with men's work with him on the island of Maui, going through some challenges in my personal life, looking for community and moving to a new place, and encountering the work they're doing there, not in some sort of specialized fancy group or with a group of like younger millennials or Gen Z people. It's a very, very broad, diverse group of people coming together through a county supported program, which Kaviko runs. So it's integrated with the state and is really working with people in a wide range of needs. There's a lot of folks that come to this program through incarceration or through addiction related issues. So there's an influence there, but it's really for everybody. And I know that I've personally been deeply nourished by that. And there's a quality to it that I I don't know if I was able to describe it there, but of like the everydayness, the ordinariness of the diversity of people that come together there that I think's been personally very meaningful for me. So I'm excited to explore that. And I just want to give thanks that Kavika's here on the show. I think Kavika, as I think we'll get into, is he gave me this long introduction. I'm going to pull from that. But I think I want to say that Kavika is a genuine teacher. That's how I experience him. He's an elder. He's been working in this field for a number of years, rooting his work in the values of Hawaiian culture and some of like the particularities that come out of life on the Hawaiian Islands and some of the wisdom and teachings that come from that place. So I feel like we're really, really lucky to have him. And I've been personally touched by him. And I think I hope that folks tuning in today will also be touched by that. And so on that note, I do want to introduce Kavika Matos in more depth. He's a family man. The first thing he says here, he's been married for 36 years. He has 5 adult children, 8 grandchildren, the center of their family's life. And for the past 28 years, he's been working in the nonprofit sector with agencies that serve families and children. He's worked at the Boys and Girls Club. He's worked with at-risk teens. And currently today, he works for Maui Family Support Services. He's the program supervisor of the Kane Connections program, and Kane is man in the Hawaiian language. So Kane Connections, man-to-man connections. And he also facilitates parenting classes there for both men and women. Kavika works at a residential addiction treatment center on island, also called Aloha House, where he talks about weekly life concepts and skills classes, as well as Hawaiian culture classes. And as I mentioned, Kavika is also the Maui County representative on the Hawaii State Commission on Fatherhood. So he's involved with other collaborations of early childhood development and men's voices against family, domestic and sexual violence and abuse. Kavika brings his skills, fathering and relationship experiences to help men and parents, especially fathers, to gain insight and receive support on their fathering journey. Self-development and always learning something new has been Kavika's quest. And as I said, you know, I feel like Kavika is really someone who walks the talk and is living this life from the inside out. And so, Kavika, I really want to thank you for the impact you've had on my life. And I really want to thank you for making this time to come on our show. And thanks so much for being with us today.
It's my pleasure. I'm super excited to do this as well. I think you two are just great men from what I've gathered. And of course, Gabe, you and I have gotten to know each other really well. So yeah, it's exciting for me to be here, and hopefully I can be helpful in some way.
Awesome. So I think just as a starting point, you know, I think I shared information there about where you're coming from in this work, but maybe as just a starting point, if you could, in your own words, just explain what is Kane Connections and what is its purpose? How does it work? What's taking place here, and you know, why is this valuable for us to be talking about here today?
Well, I think earlier when you both were speaking, you used the term real man. What is a real man? Maybe I'm still trying to figure it out too, but I have a view just based upon my experience of, you know, raising children myself and now in the what we call the kupuna, the elder stage with grandchildren and guiding them as well, and maybe correcting some of the mistakes that I've made with their old children, with my own self as a man and my view as a man. First, just to talk about the program. So I'm part of a larger agency that's been around on Maui for 40 years called Maui Family Support Services. And our niche in the community is the early childhood development program, early Head Start. And so, you know, for many years, the agency focused on the younger children through center-based programs or sites, and also home base. And also with the home base program and or with the parents who brought their children, our agency found that it was more of the mom that was taking on the lead role of engaging with their children. So some years had passed, some 20 plus years had passed. And so they decided, hey, we got to create a focus to work with the fathers, because it was the moms that was mostly involved almost all the time. So initially, without any funding, though, they started off with the focus of part-time. And that was 17 years ago or so. And the initial program was called Fatherhood Involvement Team, or FIT for short. It was a nice little acronym, yeah, FIT, which they thought would be attractive. But the focus was just on the fathers within the program. And through some funding, some 10 years later, some extra funding, the position moved to full-time, and then it allowed for hiring staff too. So when I came on board almost 8 years ago, shifting from working with kids all those many years, I like, this is relatively different for me, because for 20 years or so, I mostly worked with younger kids and teenagers. So that was my niche also, what I was known for in the community. So to shift to adults was a little bit different, but I realized that having the experience that I have, and the understanding and knowledge and the quest to keep learning has really helped me thrive and make the program thrive. With what I can relate to or have people relate to, based upon a lot of it was my own experience as well. So the work that we do, we shifted after I took over the program a year later. We changed the name and the concept to include all men, not just fathers, and especially not just fathers of the early Head Start programs. And keep in mind that our agency is a very large agency with multiple programs, including teens and including working with agencies like Child Welfare Service when there's a report of child abuse and neglect. So it's a large program. However, turning back to our program, we shifted the concept and created this new name of Connie Connections. Connie, as you said, means men. So that include all men, because in today's society, there are blended families created left and right. Men with children already, fathers with children, and or men that's going into relationship with women that already have kids. And so what I saw is if they don't have the skills, the insight, the personal insight of themselves, as well as some fathering skills, it could be detrimental to that family, to those kids especially. And if they have this old concept of men should be harsh, that just creates all these crazy dynamics. So our agency took our lead, and it's been almost 8 years now, 7 years now, since we started work helping men in general with an emphasis on fatherhood. And because of the success of that, our agency also had me responsible for doing parenting classes. And we do it through the concept of Hawaiian values that's been rather successful. So. Yeah, that's a little bit about the agency and my work here. And I'm looking forward to sharing more as you ask your amazing questions.
Thank you, Kavika, for that overview. And you know, I think you started to allude to this a little bit. So what I heard was, one, that, hey, there was a recognition that women were playing a larger role and that there might be opportunity for men to step up. Specifically in some family dynamics, and also that men might be coming into some of those dynamics with traditional, or I shouldn't say traditional, like outdated, you know, machismo type views of what it means to be a man in a family dynamic. But I want to understand kind of more generally, like, well, why the focus on men, right? Like, what is unique about the male experience, whether you have a family or not, just being a man at any different stage of life, what are some of the specific challenges? What are some of maybe the specific needs, or just the key features, right, that you find are specific to men, right, and helpful for men in particular?
Well, first, I'm very lucky to do this work because I've had the experience as a man, right? As a boy, than a man as an adult. So I can speak from that experience, which has been really helpful. And what I realized after raising our own children, being married for 36 years now, being with my wife, I understand the importance that fathers play in the role of children. Moms, you know, women have their place. And they were always known as that nurturing role model. And men would provide in the ways of finances. This is traditionally, right? Finances, and even consider the discipline, right? You wait till your dad comes home kind of thing. However, I think with societal changes of women and the way that they operate today, which is necessary financially, economically, to contribute as well to the household, and just the changes in dynamic. You know, the men, when I grew up, men was outside. They cleaned the yard, they took care of the outside of the home, and the women took care of the inside. Just based on my experience, you know, going from living in an apartment, for example, that there was no outside yard to take care of when we initially started, my wife and I, and then having, you know, one child after another, it was important for us to have that to grow. And if I was locked into that concept, and I saw my father display this and role model this for us as well, to, you know, to kokua, to help Hawaiians say kokua, to help my mom with the different tasks, for example. And he was nurturing. So I experienced that in a positive way. However, other men in my life showed the typical traditional men concept or men identity, as I described earlier. So I was fortunate in that way. But I realized that today, even more than ever, I think we need to support each other. And then even with many single dads today, you know, they have to play the role of both, I hate to call it male and the female role, but they have to be in a different mindset to make the house function and make the kids, to nurture the kids and help them thrive as well, to be ready for their time when they become adults.
So, Kavika, when folks come together in Kane Connections groups and, you know, meet, you know, obviously there's a lot of details. There's like kind of curriculum that y'all work with and things like that. But what's the benefit? What are some of the outcomes that you see coming about in the men that you've worked with as a result of having a space like this where they come together and have space to connect and work on themselves?
I think in general, when men come together, there are typical things we talk about, right? If you're involved in sports and if you have experience in sports, sports is one topic men talk about, like spacing out on other things. But there are things that men usually talk about. And for me, I think it's oftentimes very surface. We don't talk deep, especially about our feelings, for example. But to gain insight, and why we're successful is a lot of the topics that we talk about, such as what it means to be a man. What is the history of man? We talk about topics of nurturing our children and nurturing relationships. We talk about communication, for example, and people say, well, I need to learn how to communicate. No, we all communicate, whether we're quiet or not, right? Verbally, non-verbally, but it's how do we communicate effectively? And so many other topics that we talk about, driven by a curriculum that we use with starting off with open-ended questions. And, you know, it just creates conversations of things and topics that most men don't talk about in general with their friends, with even their closest friends, because of maybe stigmas of how we should be, the fear of vulnerability, for example. You know, those things keeps men stuck in this box. Rather, they want to change or see the need for change. And oftentimes that's scary for men because of especially the vulnerability when we start to open up. Because a lot of men, as boys, we were told not to open up, you know, to be quiet or to man up, to toughen up, those things that I think has impacted a lot of men today. I believe in masculinity, but I also believe in being soft and vulnerable too. And if we can find that happy balance, then I think even relationships can succeed, along with education, right? Learning about ourselves, learning about people and personality, and that it's okay, giving permission that it is okay to be emotional, for example, and being supported by other men, which is what we have found to be successful, even what's the toughest guys. And I would say, for example, men that have gone in and out of prison, you know, the culture of prison, you know, not showing weakness, allowing men to experience support of other men, even when they become emotional, perhaps about a topic or a memory that they had. just allows and allows other men to be vulnerable too. It gives, when we are vulnerable and we can be real, then it gives everyone else around us permission to do so. So did I answer your question?
Yeah. Thank you for that, Kavika. And you know, what I'm noticing within myself right now is like a lot of already where we've even taken the conversation is grounded in this idea or this assumption of like what it means to have a male role, right? And I think a lot of modern conversation or discourse around this is kind of challenging this idea, right? That there is a male or masculine role, you know, in a family or in a partnership versus, you know, not, right? And it's like, hey, no, like that, and it kind of almost singularly discards this idea of like there being value to their, you know, to having a particular masculine identity in a family dynamic. And part of me is wanting to explore that a little bit more, like what actually is the benefit of retaining some of the more masculine, you know, use the word like manning up or being strong. And it's like, why is that still, on the one hand, like we're challenging it as a society. On the other hand, like I can speak for myself, like I still associate with some of those terms, right? Or some of those ways of thinking about what my role is, right? And you know, I don't have children, but I have, you know, I'm married and my wife and I, you know, kind of have carved out roles within our partnership. And I notice that voice that does come up, right? And I do notice that, you know, I tilt towards thinking more about the finances. She thinks more, you know, tilts more towards, you know, how we manage it inside of the household. And that's in a generation where we don't even necessarily explicitly connect with those definitions of what it means to be, you know, in our respective roles. And yet we've still gravitated towards that. And maybe some of that is, you know, as you identified for yourself, like we have that example in our parents, you know, we have that example in some of the societies that we kind of grew up in or communities that we grew up in. And so I think there are two very unrelated questions that are popping up for me. One is like, you know, what is the value of that construct, right? What role does it play in our dynamic today? And then the second sort of unrelated question is, what's important about that vulnerability that you alluded to, right? Why does that vulnerability matter as we kind of bring intentionality to what this dynamic is? And what does it open up for us?
So first, you know, in regards to the roles, I don't see anything wrong with, for example, what we call the traditional male and female role. If the male is more focused on the finance and or the women is more focused on the function of the household, if it works in the relationship, yeah. But if we are restricting ourselves that is the way that it is, then there could be multiple issues because life constantly changes too. Society changes. And so therefore, I feel like we as men need to be willing to change as well and not stay so idealistic with this old concept, I think. But if it fits the relationship and it makes the relationship function in a healthy way, I'm all for that too. So then, you know, just thinking of the ideals and the term, for example, man up, I dislike that. I've come to disliking that term so much because I realized for myself that if you were raised, especially with the idea that corporal punishment or getting what we call, in Hawaii, we say, you can get lickings, right? We grew up with that. Hey, you're going to get cracks. You're going to get lickings for time. So if they were going to get licking and you heard man up attached to that, oftentimes this association with terms like man up puts us in a really bad space. And everyone has their own experiences of what they've learned to life, which makes them who they are. So instead of using this term man up, and because ironic enough, I don't know of one person that has raised their daughter and said, hey, you better woman up, right? So why is it you have to, a little kid, you have to man up, right? And then later on in life, we still use that term. In fact, women in relationships today, they admit to me as we dialogue things that, you know, they use terms not only with their little boys, but also with their husbands or their partners, say, man, he better man up. You know, but what does that mean? Would you say to your daughter, hey, you better woman up, right? So why don't we just say, hey, you got to mature up. That's just a better term, mature up, adult up, as opposed to this man up, because they too often the association with that phrase for men came with some kind of abuse attached to that. So that, you know, it's taking those things, the same message, if to me, it means man up means become responsible, accountable, become, I don't know, stronger perhaps. But adult up is, for example, one of the changes that we made. One of the things that I've come to realize in regards to men and fathers and what they bring to the children is we create courage in children that's unique to us. For example, and there's a series of videos on YouTube that you can find, National Fatherhood, something, I don't know, where, for example, they have these little video clips of what it means to be a nurturing man. And one of the clips is a father that has a child in a laundry basket, and he's whirling that child around to the household, you know, with some great music attached to that. You know, for as we develop our boys and our girls, allowing them to have courage is and to not be so fearful in this world that's ever changing, that in general society is kind of scary today compared to when I grew up back in the 60s to the 80s. You know, those are things that fathers today can still bring even naturally. And that's why it's so important for fathers to be in their children's life. That's one of the aspects of fatherhood. So, you know, I'm all about advocating for fathers and for men, and advocating for them to be real too, to be nurturing, to nurture themselves and have self-care, but also to nurture relationships and especially children around them, whether it's theirs or not.
I'd love to dive deeper on this nurturing idea. And we talked about vulnerability earlier. And I think this is a really interesting dynamic running through male identity. It's really interesting, the example you gave, Kavika, there of speaking with women sometimes in, you know, certain relationships that you're supporting, and how some of these stereotypes, you know, aren't just being held by men. You know, these are stereotypes that are held within society, and it's not just men carrying them around, right? It's also other people. It's women. It's others that, you know, implicitly have some of these understandings. And I feel like this runs so deep within the male experience. When we were prepping for the show, we talked about sensitivity, and we, you know, you were describing yourself, Kavika, that you think of yourself as a sensitive man. And then at the same time, you know, we were talking about, you know, at the top of the show, I alluded to, like, you know, really being moved, I think, by the depth of, like, the ordinary or, like, everyman quality of Kane connections and, like, the type of people who come through that door. But I think implicit in that is a kind of valuing of some level of this traditional masculinity, like, somehow that gives this legitimacy. Or if I compare that, you know, I think sometimes men's work today gets done, there's different models of men's work out there that don't feel that same way to me that I feel in encountering your work, where I feel your work is deep, it's authentic, it's able to touch men. And again, here is that problematic idea again. It's like, what's on the tip of my tongue is, like, it's able to touch real men, meaning men who, like, have addiction problems or have gone to prison or who are, like, hard guys, you know what I mean? And I think that some of the caricature and stereotype sometimes about men's work is that it's for hippies, it's for sissies, it's for guys who were sensitive anyways, which is why it's useless, right? And not valuable. And so there's a catch-22 here that's super interesting and problematic in some way, I think. around sensitivity, that there is a value and importance. We need men to be more sensitive, more vulnerable, more nurturing. But at the same time, there's this deeply held implicit value on that manning up, which essentially, as I'm hearing you describe it, to me, a main component of it is the submerging, the suppression of emotion and of emotional affect and being hard. You know, like I grew up listening to gangster rap music, and like the ethos of that is being hard. And that's the value of a man, is if you can be hard and harder than the other guy and shoot him first before he shoots you and blah, blah, blah. So that's a totally celebrated value in our society. If we look really deeply at it, like women are attracted to that. It's a certain type of, you know, it's like that's a whole dialogue that's happening. And so how do we navigate that? What's the right amount of sensitivity, so to speak? How do we value and celebrate and uplift sensitivity while acknowledging that actually that really runs counter to a lot of these ideas that we implicitly value about being a man, which like are seem kind of at odds with that? And I feel that tension inside myself. I feel like men get caught in that catch-22 a lot. So help us out. Like how do we navigate that?
You know, for me, I think it's just going back initially to the basics of childhood, first of all, and then I'll try to answer that and bring that current to my belief system today. But based upon my experience, okay, so we are what we learned, what we were taught, also what we've experienced. And I also believe that we are, there's a personality, a natural innate personality that has factors in this as well. So for me, when I think about all these different things that we talk about with the men and experience with them, I look back to my childhood. I was an emotional kid, meaning that I would cry often. I had empathy, natural empathy. I saw an animal hurting or someone hurting. I would feel something. I would tear. I would cry. But very often I was told, you know, not to. You're a boy. Don't be a girl. Don't be a sissy. Those kinds of things. So oftentimes I can remember as I've gone through this work and as I've done a lot of healing, but memories of like jumping on my bike when something happened, whether it was conflict with my siblings or something happened, I would drive down, I would get on my bike, ride on the street, pull off somewhere that I felt like no one was seeing me. And we just bawl my eyes out, right? Just let everything out. But I was afraid to do that oftentimes, even in my own household. So understanding that, yes, there are kids, both boys and girls, that have this natural toughness or strength about them, but that nothing is wrong also with being emotional. Relating that to today, I have a grandson. He's a typical boy, what we call a typical boy. Strong, he's a go-getter, he's fearless. But when he gets upset, he tends to run off also. He's the oldest, the youngest of three. And when my wife and I see him, or when I see him, for example, I see him hiding somewhere. We live upstairs for my kids who live downstairs. And when he comes upstairs and I notice that he's emotional, I'll call him over and I'll hug him and I'll tell him it's okay, try to talk to what happened. But that wasn't necessarily my experience. And allowing him to be emotional and process through that, because I want him to be a healthy man that is willing to share someday with his spouse. It's ironic, right? We toughen up boys. We want them to be unemotional or not be so emotional. Then they into a relationship with a woman, perhaps. And this is kind of the typical or general, I feel. It does not apply to every woman, but girls are normally nurtured more than boys and allowed to be emotional because they're a girl, quote unquote. And then pair up together and one wants to be emotional. One is emotional, not afraid to be, and then the male is struggling with all this idea that they cannot break down, they have to be tough. And there's a time and place for that as well. But then we expect for these relationships with men and women to work when the boy was not allowed to, if that's the case, not allowed to express himself, not allowed to be emotional and be vulnerable, because we look at that as weakness in the identity of a boy. And then you can even go further, one step further to how our brains work. You know, I've learned a lot about brain science, and there is a difference, some difference between males and female brains in the way that we function. Males were meant to, you know, in essence, survive and battle and hunt. So there's that primitive side of us too that that exists more, even naturally. So, you know, if boys usually are less emotional just biologically, the way that our brain works, but we're also teaching them in today's society, continuing to teach them that they cannot be emotional, cannot be vulnerable, then it just makes relationships even harder. I'm not saying that that's the solution to all relationships, working or not. However, I think it does impact, which is kind of why for me and the people that I touch, and if I have an influence on families, especially if I see them trying to I guess treating this their boys, especially in this old fashion, then I try to, you know, get them to see things differently in the hopes that as the male father, grandfather, whoever, uncle, whoever they are, have a different perspective as to how that child will come out in today's society.
So if I'm tracking all of this correctly, right, I think what I just heard is, yeah, there is maybe a natural orientation for men versus women in terms of, you know, what you just mentioned around the biology and the evolution. But really, I think the bigger piece is around society, right? And this idea of a typical boy or a typical girl, right? And you know, I think this is a conversation we're having pretty regularly now as a society, right? That, hey, like there are these archetypes of a typical boy that are being pushed, right? You know, less emotional, stronger, not crying, not tuning into empathy. And then maybe on the other side, if you have a girl that is exhibiting some of those headstrong, independent, you know, quote, typical, quote unquote, male orientations, then society will often shut that down, right? And suggest, hey, like, you know, you should soften up, you should do this, you should do that, you know, and it kind of pushes both boys and girls, men and women, males and females into these corners. And then that catches up, right? It catches up as you get older, as you enter into dynamic relationships, whether with a partner, or even in friendships, you know, to some degree. And then certainly, you know, as you enter that the family unit, that plays, you know, a bigger role. And what I'm hearing from what you said even earlier is it's really about finding what works, you know, finding what's authentic. So if you're someone that is oriented towards compassion and empathy and emotional attunement, then that should be cultivated. And some people probably aren't oriented that way, whether you're male or female. And you know, that might be okay too, you know, kind of like, hey, do what's sort of authentic and what's real to you and kind of creating space. And so I'm trying to go a little bit deeper here, right? So like, what does this mean, right? What does this mean for what we take forward, how we configure ourselves, you know, as a society, but also individually? Like what is the model, right? What, you know, because I'm hearing is there's a role for the like, not manning up, but maturing up, right? Becoming more responsible, stepping up when required to, you know, take on a particular situation. And that holds true for both men and for women. And so there's a role for maybe the, you know, that like maturing up, but then also a role for vulnerability, emotional attunement, empathy, you know, connecting with all of that. And I think what I'm trying to understand is like, what do we like do with all this? Like, what is, I guess, what's the like layer that we're trying to unlock here that currently, you know, we as a society are not unlocking? And what role do men play in that? And what role even do women play, you know, in terms of how we move towards this ideal that we're starting to talk about here?
You know, I don't know if I have the answer to that, but let me backstep a little bit to what you had said, Rob. I think society has changed a lot in that when a little girl, for example, is strong, sort of the boy role, we encourage that. We say, wow, she's strong. She's amazing. You're going to become president. But when a boy shows vulnerability and emotion, then, hey, you're being a sissy, for example. Stop doing that or stop being that. So I think society has changed to encourage girls to be of that full spectrum, at least from my view, versus still there are many locked in ideals of what a boy should be. And that's what I've experienced. That's what I'm experiencing even today with a lot of the men and women that I work with. So I think there's a little bit of catch up still needs to happen. And I don't mean the extreme of like, you got to be super you're expected to be feminine. That's not what we're saying as men. That's could be natural. That's another topic, but allowing boys to be boys and or in raising our children today, I think, and having the insight for the long term of what that means for them in the future as society is always changing too. As far as men today, just allowing spaces for men to be able to talk and be vulnerable and heal. A lot of the people that I work with through addiction and or the ones that continue once they get into the system and or the cycle of incarceration, that oftentimes support a lot of these ideals, but it's a lot of healing that needs to happen, I feel, of both men and women. But in regards to men, speaking as a man, the more we can heal and take a deeper look and be in a safe place and supported by other men to say, that's okay. It's okay to be emotional and process through that, to me, makes a man even stronger. So it's changing our ideals of what it means to be a man. That for me is I feel like my mission, the real man. What is the real man? Well, to me, a real man is strong, provides, is accountable, is responsible, is the protector, and also is a man that is nurturing, that is loving, that continues to grow, and not like the saying, and my father would say it often, you can't teach an old dog new tricks. To me, you can, but it's about willingness to do so as well.
Yeah, I think that there's a lot of different lights kind of lighting up for me as you're speaking there, Kavika. And when you talk, Rahul, about this, like, what's this deeper layer that we're trying to unlock? And, I meant to mention this more explicitly at the top of the episode, but, our focus on the show is about vibrant living, wisdom and tools for vibrant living. And we spent time talking when we in the lead up to the show, like, well, how is this connected? And I think, in the example you just brought forward, Kavika, that we've been talking about, it's in the title of this episode. This is really, I think, about societal healing and getting to a deeper layer of understanding of why is there these dynamics of suffering and conflict in our society. And, we were cautious, I think, and afraid a little bit, Rahul, right, around actually doing this episode because in the current environment, and I think, this is a step in the right direction. Men, I think, have been outed, as you alluded to earlier, Rahul, as kind of the problem. And that there's a lot of confrontation of men. There's a lot of breaking down of toxic masculinity, as you said before, or the patriarchy. But I think what that discourse seems to be missing is that process, though it may be needed or legitimate, justified, is vilifying this group of people who have been kind of cut off from their ability to develop emotional intelligence or the tools that would help them to not act in these ways that are become super problematic. And as that happens, I think it often pushes people more away. And I think we see that in our culture right now. It creates more dynamics around culture wars. You end up You know, you've got like the lefty, you know, like the Democrats are the mom's party and the Republicans are the men's party, you know, and like you get into these ridiculous, you know, debates and fights that we see in, you know, headlines, and it gets politicized and utilized for all these things, all of which take us away from the actual process of healing and becoming more human together, becoming more loving, creating better environments for our children to grow up in. And so they kind of exaggerate conflict. And I think what I experienced through the work you do, Kavika, in my own journey with that, in my own life, I feel like this level we're trying to unlock is something deeper than that, where we start to see like all the wounding that we've all experienced, all the imperfect stories and values and teachings we've inherited, and how twisted it all is, and how therefore you had a lot, you know, like bad things happen in the world, right? Suffering happens as a result of that. And so we have to find different ways through that than just vilifying and blaming a group of people. You know, we have to help these people, you know, which I count myself amongst. All three of us, we're in this group, right? And so I think I just want to name that as like a level that we're looking for. And like, why are we doing this episode on this show? Is like, this is essential for real vibrant living in our society. We must learn to do this together as a people, in order to make a genuinely better world for our children, and not just be vindicated in naming who the problem was, right? We have to move past that to solutions. I'm curious. I'll kind of put that out for comment from either one of you guys. And the other element I'll mention, which you touched on, Kavika, is the isolation. And I think that, you know, there's been a number of articles I've seen come out recently around adult male isolation and how men don't typically gather. As you said, we don't talk about these things. And so how is overcoming, isolation a big part of doing this work that, you know, I was just kind of alluding to? I'll put that to you, Kavika, and also Rahul, of just, yeah, like, what do you think about all that? And any thoughts or insight there?
I think by nature, we are, as human beings, we are societal beings. We want to belong, whether it's to small group or much larger group. And so a lot of these factions and people jumping on these bandwagons and making it so personal or whatever may not necessarily attach to history, but I think a big part of that is wanting to belong to something greater. So I keep those things in mind as we continue to grow our program. Knowing that people do want to belong. So create an environment where they feel welcome, safe. I think that's important. And we see, you know, incidents happen where situations of people coming together and it's not safe, but it's that need to be a part of something bigger. So that's one factor. The other factor too, that I feel like society has changed so much and it's gone wrong, is the idea of not living with the identity or connection to spirituality. I was fortunate that I grew up, and it was religious, but I grew up with that base, that life basis. But today, I think one of the issues is that perhaps families are not, and or men, not living with spirituality as a priority as well. And I love the Hawaiian culture because we use this concept called the lokahi wheel. And the idea of this lokahi means harmony, balance, unity, is that we must have the four elements of health: physical health, mental, emotional, spiritual health, and then we must have community, and we must have responsibility. And I could term that in Hawaiian concepts, but that's the gist of it. Although we may have something in this pie, if you look at it as a circle divided up into a pie, having these elements, regardless if one is larger than the other, just because of where we're at and living our life today, such as Kuleana, for example, we got to work to survive, to make an income, to live and pay our bills as a normal society person. Anyway, having those elements are really important. That's one Hawaiian concept, which is called the lokahi wheel. The other concept on a larger scale culturally is using the symbol of a triangle with a circle around it. You know, the peak of the triangle on the top is spirituality or God or what we call akua, keakua na akua, a one God, multiple God concept. So that's one peak, one point. To one side on the bottom is the human life, the connections. We call, in Hawaiian, we say kanaka or ke kanaka, na kanaka. And that's one aspect. And then the other side of that triangle is the aina, is earth. It's the environment. It's nurturing the environment. And in the Hawaiian concept is you cannot live without, you know, with an imbalance of any one of those three. We must have spirituality. We must connect and nurture each other. We must take care of the land. And it's in harmony that creates this unity to the environment and so forth. And as we move away more and more from spirituality and we start to just focus on the human life, not even taking care of the earth, for example, then I think it becomes more and more of a mess. So that's like a broader scale of the Hawaiian concept of what we call lokahi or unity. And if we use an example like that, that we understand that even spiritually, for example, you know, when we do our groups, because of the way things have shifted and you cannot mix church with state and vice versa, if you have funding, you know, all those things have impacted also the way that we function in society. And I think as men, we need to be spiritual leaders. But if my wife is more spiritual, as in our own household, she kind of guided us a lot more that way. And I, you know, I was totally okay with that. But spirituality is also an important piece. And I just wanted to make sure that we touched on, as being a man, like allowing ourselves to be guided spiritually and looking at the examples, whether you call it religion or just spiritual leaders that have come our way, to show us, you know, the humility and the great examples of having a better life and then using that also as a guide to nurture ourselves and nurture our family. I think that's important to say as well.
Yeah, I appreciate what you both just did as far as elevating this conversation right into the context of larger purpose. You know, I think that triangle between human experience, spirituality, and then protecting the earth, in a lot of ways, I'd say really connects with what we're trying to do on this show. You know, I think just a couple episodes ago, we had an episode about people and plants, you know, which is really focused on that human and earth connection, right? And a lot of what we talk about is tied to spirituality and, you know, in the way of Gabe, what Gabe was talking about, right? Vibrant living and you know, connected and interrelational living. That's all really very spiritual in nature. And I can see how if you come from that lens, right, this idea of creating space for the human experience, both male and otherwise, right, is, you know, follows pretty naturally, right, that it's all part of healing, you know, as a society, right, as a, you know, as humans, as just one part of that triangle, right, and connecting to how it's part of a larger spiritual journey. And as we talk about all of this, right, I think what I've felt within myself is a desire to address, I think, what I view as sort of the challenge, right? So I think for all three of us, by virtue almost of having this conversation, right, it comes from a place of being bought in to all of this, right, and viewing that it's important in both its independent, you know, in the human context, but also in the context of societal healing, vibrant living, spiritual enlightenment. And I think what I feel alongside that, right, is some of that tension that we articulated at the beginning of the show, right, which is if I kind of imagine taking this conversation on the road, right, to a group of people that might be less open to it or maybe less bought in, right? Immediately what comes to mind for me is the comparisons that start to emerge, right? Like if we're talking about male experience, right? Sort of the pushback on it that often comes back is like, well, okay, but you still have it easier, right, as a man than I do as a woman, or that I do as a transgender person, or oh, you still have it easy as a well-off, you know, urban man than we do as, you know, XYZ, right? And I think we're talking a lot about this, like creating safety in a space to open up this dialogue. And again, I think that's all intuitive and we're bought in, you know, as this group. And I think what I'm wanting to explore and would love to get your take on, Kavika, is like, how do we include other people in the process of making it more inclusive, in terms of in the process of creating that safe space? Like, how do we address that resistance, right, around giving space to our experience as men very explicitly, but like not at the exclusion, or not in a way of saying like, hey, you know, you as a woman, or you as some, you know, somebody else, like, it's not to say that your experience shouldn't get all the, you know, attention or the energy that it deserves. But hey, like, can we just talk about what I'm experiencing also? Like, that's kind of the feeling that I get around it. And it's like, how do we approach that dynamic, you know, in a way that doesn't minimize anybody else's experience, but also gives a space and allows people to kind of view it that way, versus as a kind of more of a adversarial dialogue. I don't know if that makes sense, but I'd love to kind of just see your reaction to all that.
Yeah, to me, 100%, because I come across that. And I, you know, I worked for an agency that has 70 plus employees. And there was a time for 3 years, we had only myself working as a male amongst all these women. And so a lot of oftentimes, even within the human services field that I've worked at, these are women who have the heart to help, want to help, but they also may have their own healing process or healing journey, which is why they were driven to do the work that we do in whatever programs they were working in, and that they may have had some pain attached to experiences with men. So I sometimes would catch the wrath of that, you know, but I have to be aware of that. Not only aware, but also sensitive that we all have our own journey. And so when somebody, you know, instead of, again, like what we were talking earlier about this, always creating these divisions between each other, or one is more important than the other. If somebody tells me, well, what about women? I'll say, yes, I acknowledge you. What about the transgender experience? I acknowledge you. I can speak as a man, but I'll be sensitive to what you've experienced or what you're going through as well. We tend to use, you know, and just being, when we talk about, and being conscious, is what I was going to say, of how we speak and the way we present ourselves, for me is very important. We talked about like communication, we're always communicating, but is it effective? So one of the ways, for example, one of the simple things that we teach is the idea of this word and or but. You know, again, communication is a sender, receiver, and then vice versa, goes back and forth as a part of effective communication. But if we're saying but, for example, then plenty of times without realizing it to the receiver, to the listener, we're saying whatever was said prior to the word but is dismissed. So if somebody says that they, you know, what about me? What about me as a woman? I'll say, yeah, you're important, and not but. And this is also important as well. As a man, you know, this is what we're experiencing, what men experience in general. So it doesn't dismiss them and their feelings or their emotions or their thoughts, their experiences. It's a way to solidify and help them understand that, yes, I understand that. And because I could have just said but, right? But that would sound so much different to them. So to validate them and what they've gone through, and to also validate what men are experiencing as well, that it's not one or the other. We're all in this. It's funny, too, because I think about, like, for example, and I face this often, where there might be a single mom that's raising boys that is so bitter with men, but then they're not nurturing the boy to be nurturing towards women because of the way that they function. So that's also something to think about, in that creating these healthy boys are important in the long run, but more immediately for men, allowing men to have that space. There was once this transgender person, a guy called me, and he shared with me that he's never found a safe place. And he came to our men's group for several months. Even if I thought no one kind of knew, because he was pretty, he was handsome, sort of handsome like you, Rael, with your nice full beard and so, so forth. Yeah. But you could tell that there were some differences. And it's awesome that he felt safe to be there, because it wasn't an issue. He identified himself as a man. You can see I'm saying he was a man. I treated him just like anybody else. We didn't make it any different. And so for him, that experience coming through was a positive. Rather, it was just for a little season as a part of his life journey. And then again, creating that space in general for men who identify themselves as a man based upon what they experienced. I think just ultimately, I cannot solve everything, but I can try to create this space for people to, or for men to come and, as I said earlier, to be open, to be real, to be vulnerable. When you say real man, then to me, that relates to just being real, you know, whatever that aspect is, faults, talents, whatever it might be. Creating an environment like that, I think, is really important on a smaller scale. And if you got all these little pods happening everywhere like that, then a larger healing can take place.
Thanks for that, Kavika. I hear spaciousness in your response and answer, you know, that there is enough room for everyone's experience, and it doesn't always feel that way. And there is sometimes experiences of scarcity, or there's sequencing challenges, you know, logistical challenges, who goes first, you know, but really in a broader sense, talking to some of those spiritual understandings and principles, you're speaking about the wheel of unity, there is space. There's really enough space for this experience and for the other. And that's really what's needed, that realization, as we dawn into that together. There is space for all of it. That's where we'll find the spaciousness. Like, oh, okay, it's possible. I'm curious, you touched on some of this earlier. You just spoke just now again to that idea of a real man, what that looks like. But I'm curious if you have like some real, like quick and dirty, like 3 points or something that like you see like qualities or to pursue that you encourage, that you see being really valuable to men, generally speaking. Obviously everyone's unique, but specifically at this time, that you see like these, you know, are valuable things as men for us to be pursuing and developing inside ourselves. What stands out to you that you could share?
Let me share this. This is sort of circling for me. It's a quote that I heard. And because especially men are task focused, that's just the way that we oftentimes in general are developed, brain-wise and in action. So this quote, it simply says, "Don't focus on what you need to get done. Focus on who you need to be in order to get it done." And so when you ask the question, what sort of is the real man? For me, it's about being responsible. It's about being accountable. It's about being nurturing and loving and having strength, though, being strength or having not just physical, but emotional strength, mental strength as well. So it's working on these different character aspects, both, and that applies to both men and women, which may look different too, but those are things that I think makes up a real man, especially being accountable, being responsible, and being self-aware. of the impact on others.
And when you say emotional and mental strength, right, I'd love to unpack that a little bit, because I think strength to me comes with these, you know, some of the other associations that we were talking about. It kind of that hardening, you know, that Gabe was talking about, like being hard. I feel like that's how strength is interpreted. And what I was hearing from you earlier is it's more about the strength to grow, the humility to grow and to evolve. But would love to kind of hear you speak to what you mean by strength in this context.
Yeah, you just said it. To me, strength is the strength to be vulnerable when necessary, to show sensitivity. Sort of the opposites of what, you know, the traditional male or toxic masculinity is about. It's kind of the opposite. Again, that's what I call like a real, have created a culture to say that that's the real man, and trying to be an example of that in my daily walk as well. You know, as I'm sharing, as I'm teaching, I'll use this as an example. And it just happened the other day where I was teaching something at the addiction center, and we were just kind of morphed into a topic, and I had a memory of a past trauma as a kid, something hit me, and it became a little bit emotional, and I was going to move on from that, but you got a class of 30 or a group of 30 people just staring at me because I was silent. I went from animated and all of that, and then all of a sudden I became silent, and I could have passed that. I could have moved on, get myself together, moved on. But I took a couple of steps back and said, okay, let me tell you why. And I shared with them that experience of childhood, you know, that it was like, it was there again. So allowing people to experience that and creating a safe place, especially for men, that as we discover ourselves and as we get in touch with our feelings and or the past trauma, for example, from the past and or good times, celebrating the good times as well, that there is that's okay. And I try to be an example of that in my daily walk as well.
Kavika, it's been so awesome to have you on. And this is one of those topics where I feel like we could do a 6-part series. You know, we could keep going. If you enjoyed it, I'm definitely down to explore having you back if you like. But as we're kind of coming up on time here.
But or
what's
and.
That?
But or and.
And. Oh, sorry, did I say but? See, catching me. So
yeah.
And as we we move towards closing, I'm curious if there's if you had like a single takeaway or something that you would want to leave with listeners, whether men or just a broader listenership listening to this. What would you share?
I think there's a process of learning, and that starts with willingness. I think next is being open-minded and then learning something new, and you have the right to decide if it's for you, and then commit, and then it takes practice. And practice takes consistency, takes action. And through that, I feel like anybody can grow, whatever their interests are, but finding ourselves, I think, is super important. And so I'm glad you two are doing this. It's been a pleasure looking at you two handsome men. I'm sort of in envy. I know you folks are also smart and you love helping people and you're spiritually connected. So it's encouraging for me to see you folks or to be a part of you and your space today. I've actually enjoyed this. And I hope it was helpful to somebody listening.
Well, I'll just echo Gabe and you know, I really want to thank you, Kavika, for joining, and very much feel that elder energy. I think the word was kapuna. I'm learning the words here as we go. And really appreciate your lending us that energy and that wisdom and that perspective as part of what we're trying to explore here. So thank you. Much appreciated.
You're very welcome. Yeah. Mahalo to both of you.
Yeah. And, you know, so if you're listening to this, I guess I just want to Thank you for taking the time to join us through this conversation. I also really want to today really impress if you know someone who you feel like would benefit from listening to this conversation, really want to encourage or ask that you share this episode with them. Of course, we like to share all our episodes, and you know, there's like the selfish personal element of that, of us, you know, growing our podcast. More so, I think we, you know, if these topics are valuable to you, we think it's valuable that it be shared. But you know, some of the topics that we've touched on today, you know, I guess I just want to emphasize that as we close. I personally feel, I hope you feel that after hearing this today, but this is a really important area in our culture, and we need more support for the men in our culture to be able to make these transformations and grow. And it does take a village. And so, yeah, if you think of someone, if someone's popping into your mind now or something that resonates, put it out there to them or put them in touch with us. And I want to also just lift up, you know, this is kind of fun for me personally. It's our first guest from Maui. With work going on Maui, where I've lived the last few years. And so that's exciting. And so I want to celebrate that really local connection. And I want to encourage that too, in, if you're listening to this, wherever you are, to explore what your resources are in your local community. There's more going on than you might think in a lot of places. And there, you know, as Kavika explored, you know, this is not some fancy new agey group gathering somewhere that's hard to access or something. This is a county provided service because it's a real need and that's been identified. And so there are other agencies and groups out there that are doing this work. And so I just encourage folks to connect with that and find that in your local community. On that note, I just want to again say thank you for listening to us. If you enjoy listening to us, please share us with a friend, leave us a review. You can join our newsletter, which is linked in the episode description below. And just want to give thanks. You know, we spend our time here when we have that opportunity to explore vibrant living, wisdom and tools for that. And Kavika, you just sharing that you've enjoyed the process. You know, I feel like that's always something we're going for, you know, that that we enjoy the process here, our guests, hopefully you as a listener enjoy this process. And with whatever you do, carry it forward in that spirit. That through your enjoyment, through your natural pleasure, you're moving in somewhere that's growthful and leading you somewhere good, and therefore leading us all somewhere good. So in that spirit of the Lokahi wheel, the wheel of unity, I just want to give thanks to everyone who's been part of this today. Rahul, Kavika, it's great to be here with you. And you, listener, thank you for tuning in with us. That's it for today. Thanks for joining us, and we will catch you on another episode next time. Take care.